Emotions are infectious, like a dog scratched ear. A pleasure is high. Welcome to the Box Tunnel Survivors Group, a place for those affected by the issues raised in the TV show Being Human. Hot chocolate, anyone? Hello. Welcome back to the Box Tunnel Pod. My name's Michael. I'm walking to work at the minute, and this is the first day of potential sunshine. It's trying to get through in what feels like about 6 months. Whereas I think there was a day of sunshine about a month ago, and that was nice. But I'm fed up of this fucking weather, so let's hopefully see if it improves. Because I'm getting married, an outside wedding in about 3 weeks' time. Sorry if I'm a bit breathy. I walk to work like about 2.5 miles there and 2.5 miles back every day. But you don't realise how breathy you are until you're talking into your phone. So welcome to a bonus episode. I guess I don't really know what to call the episodes that are away from the episodic ones, like the interviews and the other bits. I'm just going to call it just episode 32 or 33, wherever we are now. I don't know. This episode, this is why you should kind of have a basic script for an intro. This episode is with Rebecca Cooper, who plays Kara in Being Human, the first 3 series, and it was great to have a chat. This is an interview that has been in the making for about, I'd say, over a year. We kind of refer to that in the interview. I've got quite a few interviews lined up with people, but you know, sometimes I'm busy, they're busy, we can't make the first few times that we agree to meet up. But, you know, things are coming, and this interview is finally done, and it was worth the wait because Rebecca was absolutely lovely company. And, yeah, a real insight into a character that, you know, I think she was only in 5 or 6 episodes, but she made an impression, and as we discuss, she had quite a through storyline in her time on the show. And fucking hell, I'm out of breath. I've got a big hill to go up yet. So yeah, I'll see you on the other side. I think probably I'll record the intro, outro on the way home. Well, I'll be probably a bit slower because I've done eight and a half hour shift in the office and more tired. But hopefully it still won't be raining. And I still won't have a script for the outro. Here is my chat with Rebecca Cooper.
Welcome to the podcast with a thumbs up. Rebecca Cooper, how are you doing?
Very well, thank you, Michael. Yeah, very excited to be here.
I've got to get the first and most important question out of the way.
Okay.
How do you identify as a vampire? I know you played a vampire, but as a vampire, a werewolf or a ghost?
Do you know what? I do identify as a vampire.
Of course you do.
Of course. Close second would be ghost. Mm. Lastly would be werewolf. But no, I'm sticking with vampire on that question, I would say.
Dare I ask why?
I'm a history lover.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, they transcend, they go through time. They see everything. Slight violence issues and bloodlust.
I'm not going to go too deep into that. I'm not your therapist.
Okay, fine. So vampire all the way.
Vampire all the way.
Yeah, what about you?
I think I would associate more as a ghost. Early on in an episode, I gave the reason, and I can't remember why I gave the reason. I think I'm not good-looking or broody enough to be a vampire. And I'm not hairy enough to be a werewolf, so I think ghost kind of came in the middle.
That's fair dues. I mean, I'm definitely all of those things, so I could be anything to be honest. But not, you know, you can think outside the box with the vampire bit.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is what they obviously did with me.
Well, that's it. Is it weird when someone like me contacts you and goes, hey, do you want to come on this podcast about a show you did 10 or so years ago?
Yeah.
It was quite a cult show. And yeah. You're probably going, what?
No, I think it's great. And especially with this show, it's so, the world of it was so well-rounded and full and every, you know where you are with it. So, no, I don't think it's weird because I can understand how much of a life it was for everyone, including myself,
yeah.
If that makes any sense.
Yeah.
But equally, yeah, I have had to search the memory banks a bit.
Yeah, but that's it. I mean, it's still got... I mean, there's quite a few nutters like me who follow it and still like quote it every day of our lives and all Excellent. That kind of thing. But it does seem because of some of the performers on it and some of the writers that have gone on to do other things, that Brilliant. It still picks up a following nowadays.
Definitely.
People pick it up from Netflix or ITV Player or anything. So it's still going.
Yeah. No, and it's great. And I think that's testament, like you say, to the writing. And just to that world that was created. And essentially, you know, I mean, there are no new stories, are there? So it's a friendship thing. It's a romance thing. It's a sort of understanding humanity thing.
Yeah.
Hence the title, I presume. But
It had so much more. Like even a character like Kara had so much more than, oh, she's just a bit of a silly vampire human who's been converted to a silly vampire. There was more heart to it and more. And I think as the show went on, you could see the empathy that the viewer could have with her.
Definitely. Yeah. Because, you know, like you said, you know, not all vampires can be sexy broody, you know. So I think they needed that equilibrium kind of thing to put Kara and others.
And Seth,
exactly, to sort of show, well, that life is messy.
Was it a conscious decision? Because you've got a bit of a West Country accent anyway, I assume. Whereabouts are you from?
I'm Sussex. There you go. The Bristol was purely because she was from Bristol. That is what the script called for. So... Yeah. That is what I went in and did.
Yeah. It can be, if it's said in a certain way and with certain facial expressions, it can be quite a funny accent, I suppose.
Yeah.
I'm trying to be careful with what I'm saying here because I don't want to make any Bristolians.
No. And I know, you know, well, I became aware. I mean, I just went in and did the job kind of thing, if you see what I mean. You know, it called for a Bristol and those were the words that were on the page. So, and... I got the job and that's how I, you know, played those lines kind of thing. Any comedy is, you know, was there in the words kind of thing. And that's who she was. I know that Bristolians weren't too happy, some of them. But that's what we went with. That's how she happened.
I think also when the show moved to Cardiff, they also used the accent there sometimes for comic authors as well.
No, it's quite common. You know, there'll be the character, you know, not the lead, so to speak, but those sort of supporting roles are often from the place where they are setting it, you know. So I loved it and I love Bristol and I still love it now because of my being human roots.
So do you remember what it was in the audition that you were reading out?
I think it was the hot chocolate scene. Because I'd done a show at the National and the Di Carling, the casting director, had been to see it, and she was then casting this, obviously. And she said, "Oh well, I'll I'll get Rebecca in. You know, we've only got tiny parts, and you know, I'm always like, yes, brilliant, I'll do anything within reason. So we did the. I'm fairly sure it was that scene, and I also think, I don't know how much of the series had been written by then. Obviously, quite a lot. But it wasn't necessarily going to be a recurring character. It was the point. I sort of got hired for that episode, and I don't think I was driving back to London, and I got a call saying, "Oh, actually, they want you for episode 3 as well." You know, so it just sort of, I don't know, something. Cara obviously played a useful part for the storytelling process, yeah. And they just kept on putting me in there. Thank you very much, Toby.
Yeah. That's the thing. I think we talk about it quite a lot on the podcast, is how even the, you know, quite minor characters feel so fully developed, and they have a big role to play in storyline at some stage. So they're not just there to make up the numbers.
No. I was just reading, because I take notes after every audition I did, and I wrote, brilliant audition, I loved it, which doesn't really tell you much. I think I kind of felt that the character was, well, she was someone worth playing, and then as she developed throughout the sort of her time, she went all sorts of places, didn't she, really?
Was she fun to play? Did you find her fun? Because she looks like she would be pretty much.
She was deep, but she was very bullied. You know, that's why she was a lot how she was, kind of thing. So sort of, you know, that's not great, is it? But, in terms of going to work and doing her, it was great, brilliant. And just the entire crew and all the cast, it was a lovely job.
I hear that a lot about the show, because I know it could be an actor or a writer thing to say, oh yeah, that was the best show I've ever worked on, oh, everyone's so lovely. But it does seem like a continual theme of being human, that it was pretty much smooth running and everyone got along.
Certainly from my point of view, you know, like I just felt very lucky that I kept getting called back to do more, you know, so I sort of had the best of all worlds, really, you know, didn't have the sleepless nights of the leads. But
that's it, yeah. Did you expect to come back to series 3? How did you find out that you were coming back?
No. Yeah, it was interesting. Now, this is where my memory does fail me completely. I think I was hopeful, and there was a certain sort of gap between each series, and it felt like, oh, it must be getting to the next time. You know, I honestly cannot remember, but I do remember, because I was then pregnant with my first baby by that point, so I hadn't told them, obviously, because I didn't know if I was coming back, and then we got the call to say, yeah, you're in it, which was lovely. But I do remember my agent saying, oh, I think you're being killed off, and I was like, ah, okay. But I'm so glad it happened that way round, that then I got to tell them that I was also having a baby, because otherwise I'd always think, thanks, baby.
Yeah, you ruined it.
You've lost me a job. No, that's awful. No, not really. But it happened the right way round. So that was good.
Yeah, and also I think, firstly, not many of the smaller characters came back to Series 3 from Series 2. And I think the way Kara's story ended, it was with her biggest involvement in the whole thing, and that whole face off with Mitchell and then Annie in the cellar I think it was so good for Kara to come back and have that, those scenes and that
vindicated. Yes, totally, totally. And it sort of closed up or finalized her sort of story, really. She was totally a product of Herrick, and so she couldn't be without his recognition at all. Yeah. You know, so then that was it, done.
That touches on, I think, what you just mentioned earlier about how she was unhappy, you know, as a human and all that kind of thing. Yeah. And even without that spelt out on screen, you can kind of imagine her being a loner in the canteen at work.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Everyone picking on her and all that kind of thing.
Absolutely.
And that's not even said. I doubt Toby would have even created a backstory for that. But you can kind of feel the way that she kind of needed Herrick and needed...
Yes.
It was that... just that need to be wanted, maybe, and respected.
Absolutely. Well, yeah, and it's often, you know, it's what you find with sort of, you know, fanatical people, you know, who grab hold of a cause, however, you know, ill-advised kind of thing. You know, the people with an unbalanced, you know, or void in their life go all in on that thing, and without that thing, then there's nothing in their life, you know, kind of thing. So if she'd sort of had friends or played netball or something, you know, she might not have had the arc that she did, or, you know, she probably wouldn't have even, she might have been impervious to Herrick's sort of, you know, onboarding of her or whatever.
Yeah.
That sounds weird. But, you know, do you know what I mean?
That sounds like a job in an office.
A job,
just, Herrick's just on board in Cara today.
Yeah. What do you call it? What do you call it when
recruiting.
Someone... Oh, that's the word. Yeah. That normal.
I have recently started a new job and they did onboard me and not recruit me.
That's fair enough. Wow. I don't even know where that came from. Wow. Anyway.
Like, in terms of how you played... a vampire.
Yeah.
Obviously, I'm not saying you Daniel Day-Lewis'd it and, you know, went around your everyday life snarling at people. But did you kind of approach Cara differently when she became a vampire from the brief side we saw of her as human?
As human. I definitely think she had more steel in her as a vampire. So I think, although you always need sort of like a reason why you're saying your lines or whatever, in her human scenes, she was the completely downtrodden one that would, you know, she was a victim basically.
Yes, yeah.
And although in many ways she still was that when she was a vampire, it definitely felt like, there was something in her at that point that gave her strength. So I think I certainly didn't Daniel Day-Lewis her, but I that was definitely in the back of my mind. And Toby's excellent description of in one script, I can't remember, where he said something, Cara, mad as a badger. And I always held on to that.
Yeah, it fits.
Yeah. Pretty much. You know, I didn't study badgers or anything like that, but I thought, So that's kind of, I definitely approached her with that. She always always was for the good of the, once she was a vampire, you know, that was it.
Yeah. When you say mad as a badger and in association with Cara, the first scene that comes to my mind, I think, is... when she's hiding under the table and Annie walks towards her.
Yeah.
That's the first, it might not have been that scene, but that's the first thing that springs to my mind.
Yeah, that's a good, I remember that scene. Yeah, that was in the Undertakers, I think. Wasn't Yeah, good scene that was.
Now, I know, like, actors whether it's on stage or on screen, they go through some mad things they have to do that they wouldn't normally do in their everyday life, dress up as something or other, or say something they'd never say. But in terms of one scene with Kara springs to mind is when you attack those schoolgirls.
Yeah.
Like, how self-conscious are you, or like aware that there's the real world going on around you and people walking past going to their jobs or whatever? Yeah. And there's you covered in blood, wiping your face, a person down on the floor having just been eaten. Do you kind of just go, wow, this is fun, this is, or could you, you know, it depends how many times you do a take as well, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, with that one, you're certainly not self-conscious because that's your job, you know, so there was nothing of that. And, you know, you've got the script, you are doing what the instructions are telling you kind of thing, putting it plainly. In terms of that, it was sort of closed off. There weren't people wandering around, so it wasn't, you didn't feel overlooked. Not that that would have mattered as such. And from a character point of view, Kara went for them because they were bullies, you know, so they needed to be sorted out. That was the sort of drive of why she did it. It was really good fun. Just after the take where I'm walking towards the camera, you know, with the black eyes and everything, I think just after, one fang just fell out. So that's why they had to cut it there, I think, if I remember rightly. So you don't get self-conscious, because if you did, the viewer would definitely see it. I mean, it'd be dreadful, wouldn't it? And I mean, I did love doing it all. So it was like, yes, this is brilliant. And I don't know if you can tell, but I don't usually play baddies. So I knew that, you know, I should enjoy this because I'm not going to be doing this all the time kind of thing. And it was working with a great stunt performer. She was the sort of close-up-y bits. I cannot remember her name, but she was brilliant and I was in awe of her. Made it really easy to do. So that was cool.
Speaking of stunts, this reminds me, and a fang dropping loose, what's it like being attacked by Aidan Turner with a brick or a rock?
It was a rock. Yeah, it was really wet, but that sounds wrong as well. It was, we were in a cave in Bristol, which was random enough, and it was all wet on the floor, and it was all sort of choreographed and sorted out, you know, like, so angles of camera and stuff. But I did have a sense at that point of, oh, this is it. You know, this is the end of my, you know, but I hadn't been told that was it or anything, but I hadn't been in any long going series. So I thought, oh, well, that's just what happens. Then you do your final scene kind of thing. And then that's that. Luckily not, but it was very intense. I do remember me and Aidan not really, you know, him being over here, me being over there, because it was quite an angsty scene, wasn't it? Then he just smashed my face in with a brick, and I just was lying in the mud. That is literally what it looked like.
I can imagine also down there it must have been cramped, dark. Mm-hmm. How many, like, people from the crew were?
I don't remember it being cramped, actually. It was just a really random place. I've never been back. It was really dark, but obviously there's lighting. I think the whole crew were in there.
Wow.
Because, as I say, it felt, you know, there was definitely headroom, for example. You know, you didn't feel all crouchy. And then, yeah, I seem to remember them having to find the best sort of shadow to come out of. You know, it was sort of that for the director. And then, yeah, just choreographed how he was going to smack me across.
Yeah, because there's a great shot with the shadows.
Yeah,
it's a really good shot.
It is, yeah. I take my hat off to, well, every single crew member I take my hat off to in everything because they're brilliant. But the lighting guys, you know, and the, well, yeah, DOP was just very clever, I think.
I mean, if you had been Daniel Day-Lewis, he would have probably taken the rock around his face.
Exactly. And he'd have probably broken his jaw and, you know, not been able to speak. Yeah, no, I don't think that, I think it's sort of illegal in the workplace, probably.
Yeah. If I go to the office tomorrow and someone tries to crack me around the head with something, I'll go to HR.
I was going to say, and they'd probably offboard that person. Sorry.
That's good, I like it. Cara is, in her own way, a big through line through the show, because first she's recruited by Herrick, then indirectly setting about his downfall by giving Annie the location, then bringing Herrick back to life.
Yes.
Which is a whole big storyline that proceeds in series three.
Yeah.
If time had not been an issue, and obviously if things had gone another way, is there a storyline or something you'd wanted Cara to explore or something for Cara to do?
I mean, maybe just see if she could have handled a life turn in any way, you know, if she could have been reined in for their purposes, kind of thing. She wouldn't have done it off her own back, but, you know, if she could have fitted in a bit more. But that was her story, that she didn't fit in. Therefore, you know, I think it was a good arc. And so I can't think of anything.
I've kind of got in my head a little, not necessarily, maybe it's like imagine a little spin-off.
Yeah, yeah.
Cara and Seth, and they were, trying to run the vampires of Bristol.
Well, can you imagine? The carnage and the absolute, but yeah.
And it'd be just a comedy of errors. They'd kill the wrong people. They'd just do it in totally. Open daylight. They'd be in the papers.
Yeah.
You know, and all that kind of thing.
Oh, it would be a catastrophe, literally.
It could kind of be a world where, whereas the main vampires of Being Human are trying to keep it secret. Seth and Cara would just don't care. And they'd let it out to the entire world.
Absolutely. That's the downfall of so many sort of organisations, isn't it? Like the fools being let loose. That would be great. I mean, that would be great fun.
I'm going to pitch this now. I'm going to pitch this. I don't care if it's 10 or so years ago. I'm going to pitch it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that'd be great.
So, in terms of upcoming projects, you are in the theatre coming up soon?
Yes, yeah, back at Salisbury Playhouse, actually, which is lovely.
Because I remember when I started talking to you about a year ago, you're like, I've got this play coming up, and it's exactly now we've been talking the last few weeks. I've got this play coming up. Is it to say you're doing the same play?
Same venue. No, I'm just very lucky. It's a bit like Being Human. I keep getting asked back. It's very kind. This one coming up is at Salisbury Playhouse, and it's an Alan Ayckbourn 80s classic comedy, A Chorus of Disapproval, it's called, which is I'm playing Hannah, who... it's a play within a play. They are the local amateur operatic society is putting on a production of the Beggar's Opera, but lots of affairs and double dealings and stuff go on around it. So that's that. And this time last year, I was there doing an Akeborn 70s play. Called How the Other Half Loves, which, was sort of three couples and the comedy that sort of comes from that. So it's mad because, well, it's 40 years ago, so it's a period piece. So, you know, you go on the set and you're like, oh, yeah, and you wear the costumes and you're like, yeah, this is old. This is bad. So yeah, now I'm about to start that. Literally.
How long is it the run for?
It's 25th of April to the 18th of May, so just a short run.
So you've got to get your plugs in. You're on a podcast.
Oh, that's true. That's true. In. Yeah. Thank you very much. Yes. Yeah. Come along. don't do. Accent.
Oh well, I'm not interested.
Oh, sorry.
So in terms of like theatre work then, how different do you find that to TV? And is the live element of it a bit more thrilling maybe? Because obviously TV can be a bit laborious with reshooting and all that kind of thing.
Well, I still don't find any work laborious. That's
you're in the right job then.
Well, exactly. Once you do, I think you should pack up really. So I would say, yeah, theatre. It is a thrill. It's petrifying as well. Just before you go on every night, because what if? But that also, that's why we go and watch plays, isn't it? Because you know, what if? It's sort of that shared experience.
It's the whole thing: live theatre, live music, live sport. Yeah. It's that sense of unpredictability, maybe.
Exactly. And hopefully watching people sort of good at what they do, like bringing the best to to it. And then TV, it's so weird because obviously it's the same because you're saying someone else's words and you're inhabiting a space that you're bringing a story to life, but it is just completely a different thing in terms of the technique of how you want to get things across, but at the core of it then you just say the lines. That is it's mainly the secret.
is there ever a side of you that would want to do writing, whether it be TV or theatre?
Yeah, I mean, I've got three stories in my brain. I definitely think writing is a skill in and of itself, and I keep giving myself the chance to get it out on the page. And it's I've done a couple of children's shows and stuff, and that's my limit currently. But no, I've got a pet project that I'm desperate to get out. But
would
I haven't got skills.
Be if this is not too revealing a question, would this be in drama, comedy, or any certain field?
Yeah. Yes. Comedy features quite highly, and not that I can help it. Slightly historical as well. That's sort of where you sort of cut me open, and that's my main interests really.
Was your first TV Little Britain? Was that your first?
Yes. Wow. Yeah. Good knowledge.
Yeah. See, it's in there. Yeah,
very good. That was mad. I auditioned at the BBC on the day that we won the London Olympic bid. On all those tellies, it was like celebration thing. But between doing that audition and filming the we got rehearsals for it even. That was cool. But between that point, the 7/7 tube bombings had happened. Oh, so it was like a wow, this is a moment in time kind of thing, you know. So yeah, it, high to low, so, but
very, very memorable.
It was, it really was, yeah. Yeah, and it was a great, I mean, it's a bit cancelled now, isn't it, Little Britain? But it was a good thing, first thing to have on my CV, to get me in the door for other telly stuff.
You mentioned rehearsals, and now I assume because of budget and time and all that kind of thing with being human,
was the
only rehearsal time, I guess, really kind of just on set?
So certainly for me, yes, I'm unaware. I don't know if the principals sort of, I doubt they went in a room and said, I'm going to stand here and here and here, because it doesn't work like that. But I would have thought that they had something, especially to start off with in that first series. Yeah. We did get a table read. You get a table read, you know, where everyone comes and reads, and I remember having to read my sort of, I can't remember, I say something like, something about a little doggy, and just sort of thinking, oh God.
What have I got myself into?
No, I loved it, but, and everyone's very supportive. But yeah, no, so for me, certainly, yeah, you get on set, you sort of run the lines with each other, then you'll have a chat, the director will say, right, vaguely, here, 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 and you sort of do a walk, and then you do a run for the crew, so that, you know, you're not going to bash into the camera or anything like that.
Or look at the camera. Go, hi!
Oh, yeah, no, don't do that. and then you go for it. Yeah, so that's definitely that. But no, Little Britain and Birds of a Feather, sort of old classic comedies, I'd say. Birds of a Feather, we rehearsed for a week, and then filmed in front of an audience. So I suppose that's why you do rehearsals like that.
Yeah.
That was like a luxury. It was gorgeous. And Little Britain, we rehearsed in a venue and everything.
Yeah.
For those couple of scenes.
With Birds of a Feather. Is filming in front of a live studio audience in comedy pretty much like theatre to you? Was it pretty much the same experience?
It was very theatrical, that definitely, yeah.
Yeah.
You want to do it in one take, because that's the audience reacting. You know, if they've seen the joke before, then it's not as funny, is it?
Other attempts on, really laugh this time. Come on, guys.
Yes. I mean, I presume they get the laughter track, you know. I mean, it's, you know, it's a particular type of comedy, isn't it? But yeah, no, that, I mean, that was the best of all worlds, that. Little Britain, my scenes weren't in front of an audience, but they did do some in front of an audience. But then all the other telly is obviously, you know, on set or on location, not with audience. Basically.
All right. I think that wraps us up. Thank you very much for coming on the podcast,
Michael. Finally. Sorry.
That's all right. Honestly, it's both of us. It's like, can't do this week. No. Well, I can't do that week. Because it's just fine. It's fine. It's just the way it goes. It's no problem at all.
Brilliant.
And good luck with the play.
Thank you very much. Yeah, everyone should come along. I see what you know, go selling on, it now. I understand. A chorus of disapproval at Salisbury Playhouse. In May.
Many thanks to Rebecca Cooper for not doing the whole sounding like a twat thing and being a pleasure to speak to. I really enjoyed our chat. And you can get to the Salisbury Playhouse. It is from Thursday the 25th of April to Saturday 18th of May. A Chorus of Disapproval. Rebecca will be one of the cast members there. And tickets are pretty cheap. They're from £12. So if you're local, I'd recommend going there and you'll have a great night. So now I am walking home. Spring is still in the air. It's good to report. And there's a man walking towards me with a dog. And all of a sudden, even though it just looks like I'm having a phone call, I'm very conscious of the fact that I'm actually talking to my phone for a podcast. So I'll do the little admin-y bit after they've walked past. Just bear with. I can have a pretend conversation, couldn't I? Oh, yeah, really tough day at work. Yeah. People are wankers. My boss is a cunt. And, it's incredibly discreet, I'm using the Z word. Right, anyway, the admin. If you would like to follow the podcast on social media, Twitter, it's BoxTunnelPod. On Tumblr, it's BoxTunnelPod as well. On Facebook and Instagram, it's the BoxTunnel Survivors Group. And if you want to email me, get in touch, talk to me about any old nonsense, if it's your disapproval of me using the C word around a stranger who didn't notice, it's fine. Contact me at boxtunnelpod@gmail.com. If you want to help donate money, just to help with the running costs, you can go to ko-fi.com, that's ko-fi.com/boxtunnelpod. And that just helps with the running of the podcast. It's been a bit stressful the last 2 or 3 episodes because I've had kind of technical issues, but we plow on, we move on. These things don't matter in a year's time. We get through it. What else have I got to say? I think that's pretty much it. The next episode will be Becoming Human. Hannah will return for that. Well, she has returned for that. Spoiler, I've recorded it. And that will be out the next full moon in a couple of weeks. And I was going to have a break on, well, between, what was it, April and June. But because of all the technical issues, and we've had a bit of issues with our dog, about a month after he had surgery for his back left leg and the cruciate ligament in his knee, he decided, which is a 4-month recovery time, by the way, he decided to break the other back leg in his cruciate ligament on the right. And we're still waiting to see what we can do with vets and all the costs and stuff involved. He's getting old, he's hobbling about, he's got a fucked front left leg as well with a chip bone in it. So that just came about at a really bad time because I was going to release the Becoming Human episode, and I just had a weekend to edit it and I couldn't because we'd just been told that news and we didn't know what we were doing. We were literally thinking, oh my god, we're gonna have to put him down in a few days. So I do hate missing the full moon schedule, if it's not planned, like that break was supposed to be planned. But yeah, little Torres is hobbling on like an old man. But we'll see how he is. And what else have I got to say? I think that pretty much wraps it up. It's a nice day. And I'll sign out as I sign in with Dog Scratched Deer by Henry's Funeral Shoe. No one's around, it's fine. Wait, someone walking the dog. You scratched my dog's ear? You threatening? No. Until next time, little doggies, see ya.
Was the Box Tunnel Podcast, and thanks.